One, two, three. Hello. You have discovered the Felon File. FelonFile.com is a podcast exploration and discussion of law enforcement, history, issues, and incidents in the Appalachian Mountains and elsewhere. Felon File is hosted by Scott Lunsford, retired police detective, sergeant, author and researcher. This is a bonus episode of the Felon File podcast. Scott will be back soon with new stories of crimes and incidents in the Appalachian Mountains and elsewhere.
Hello. Just a quick addition to Victoria's bonus for this particular weekend. I wanted to touch base real quick on some information that we did last week. The escapee from Alabama, Vicky White and Casey White, who escaped from, or basically walked away from, the jail in Lauderdale County, Alabama. New piece of information has come in. The vehicle that they had switched to when they abandoned the patrol car in the shopping center parking lot has been recovered. It's been located about 2-3 hours away from where they were last seen in Tennessee. Now, I don't know if this gives us a direction of travel for the escapee and Victoria White. Information has also been released that Vicky has been having contact with Casey White for about 2 years now. They have documentation showing where she made phone calls and other contacts while was incarcerated in a state penitentiary there in Alabama. The U.S. Marshal Service is, of course, now involved with locating the fugitives. They've released some new photographs that they have doctored showing what Vicky might look like with darker hair. You can find those on the internet if you'd like to take a look at them. I think one of the biggest indicators about the two is the difference in size. If you recall, and he's much taller than Vicky, that would stand out, the two of them walking together, I believe. That and the fact that Casey White is pretty well covered up with white supremacist tattoos and the such. The reward has increased for the arrest of the two individuals, and hopefully it won't be long before the two are brought to justice. And another interesting point about that particular case and investigation is they have interviewed another detention employee from 2016 when Casey tried this same thing and was unsuccessful. He had convinced a female employee of the detention center he was in at that time to help him escape, but they located the shiv, or the homemade jail knife, on his person before that could happen, and he was moved to a more secure facility at that time. And of course, Vicky White, and I doubt that you're listening to this particular podcast, but if you are, please turn yourself in so you don't get hurt and nobody else gets hurt. Casey, I'm not too concerned about, but I would hate to have a civilian end up being injured while he was trying to escape or get away. And I'm sure you would have problems trying to live with that issue if it actually happened.
Another shade of blue for your bonus listening.
Now, keeping with our theme of Alabama, another situation that has come to light in the great state of Alabama, which happens to be where my little sister lives, Brookside, Alabama, a town in north central Jefferson County. As of 2010, the census of the population of the town, 1,363 individuals. Brookside has a very interesting history as a former mining town. The first settlers in that area that is now called Brookside arrived around 1838. The Brookside Mine was actually opened in 1886 by the Colburn Coal and Coke Company. Brookside incorporated into a small town in 1898. By around 1900, the town had a railroad depot, dry goods store, several saloons, always a good thing, and a drugstore. And the first school was built also in that time frame of 1900. Now, one thing that was unusual and still is to a certain extent, is Brookside has a very large Eastern European immigrant population. At that time period, around the 1900s, facing a persistent shortage of labor. And you have to remember, too, mining was very difficult at that time period and very, very dangerous. Recruiters for the mining companies went overseas to what was then Czechoslovakia, and they recruited miners to come back to Brookside and mine there, as well as other mining companies in the Alabama area. The number of miners at Brookside peaked around 1914, right before the start of World War I. And in 1920, a combination of the United Mine Workers strike and a worldwide drop in coal prices caused one of the biggest mines there, one of the biggest employers, to close down. Brookside miners organized with the United Mine Workers of America and carried out a very successful, albeit violent, strike in 1906, again in 1908, and a big one in 1920. The 1908 strike was marked by what is called and referred to as the Battle of Johnson at the Johnson Tunnel near Brookside. This happened July 17, 1908. 30 deputies were forced back through the tunnel by over 1,000 striking mine workers. And this forced the governor, at the time, Governor B. Comer, C-O-M-E-R. He ended up having to call in the Alabama State Militia for help. And this other strike that happened in 1920 with the United Mine Workers led also to call-outs of the National Guard at that time period. And the United Mine Workers lost a lot of its influence in Alabama at that time. Another interesting aspect between 1899 and 1902, local governments were in the habit of practicing what was referred to as convict leasing in that particular area to work in Jefferson County. Laborers were sent to the mines from the jails and from the penitentiary locally. You could go and lease a laborer, and you didn't have to pay him because you were paying the sheriff to pay them for the laborers, and the forced laborer was put into the mines. There were over 100 leased laborers who died working in the coal mines there in Brookside at the time that it was still legal for prisoner labor to be leased out. Cruel and unusual punishment, violation of the Constitution. Yeah, my personal opinion is yes, it is. Another aspect in history was the silent film that was made in 1925 called Coming Through, starring Wallace Berry, was shot in Brookside, Alabama, with a lot of actors being chosen and used from the local population. The film was based on a very popular novel at the time by Alabama writer Jack Bethay, and the book was entitled Bedrock, which also had to deal with mining. And quite a bit of violence, too. There are no prints of this particular movie in existence today that anybody can find. It's considered a lost film. Now, with the saloons and the mines that were in Brookside at that time, going back to 1899, Grant Craig, C-R-A-I-G, was charged with murdering his wife at that time. The actual homicide of his wife ended up occurring outside the city limits. That particular morning, Grant Craig was shot and fatally wounded by Deputy Sheriff Armstrong and City Marshal in an attempt to arrest him. Craig was wanted in Walker County for the murder of his wife, which occurred at Coal Valley, a town set up outside one of the mining areas there. Craig had been suspicious of his wife's activities while he was underground mining for coal. And one day, not going to work, he followed his wife to a couple of the different coal mining camps. And then after about the third one, there in Walker County, and he confronted her. And after an argument, he just up and shot her. Shortly after the shooting, the sheriff there in that county notified the local law enforcement in Brookside there was a good possibility that Craig was heading that way. And it didn't take long before some individuals located or saw Craig, heard about a reward for his arrest, passed the information on to Deputy Armstrong, who took the marshal, and the two went over to take the fugitive in custody, and was in the sleeping barracks when he was located by the deputy sheriff and the town marshal. Deputy Armstrong, when Craig was found, was quoted as saying, "Throw up your hands." Craig was quoted in saying, "Not much." And then he took off running. And the officers, of course, ordered him to stop, but he didn't. They gave him the command of halt several times. And finally, in the process, they ended up shooting the fleeing man as he was trying to get away, emptying their revolvers at the man as he was running away. Those rounds didn't strike the person they were after, Craig, but they apparently did quite a bit of damage in the surrounding area as far as property and some civilians being injured. Finally, one of the shots took effect, hitting Craig in the back of the neck and knocking him down. And a second shot also got him in the right lung. And a third shot ended up grazing him on the left side. Craig was picked up and carted off to the jail where a doctor was called, but Craig ended up passing away. It was later discovered that he had been staying at a boarding house, and apparently that was where he was running to. At that boarding house, he had a significant amount of money from a robbery he had done, as well as ammunition and firearms and other weapons. There are actually quite a few homicides that occurred in that time frame in Brookside, Alabama. A newspaper article dated May 6, 1897, on page 3 of the local paper, reports that, quote, "Another murder was added to Brookside's calendar on Sunday. Bob Payne, a well-known individual wanted on several charges by the sheriff of the county, shot and instantly killed Lulu Tyrese, the wife of Alex Tyrese, who was a respectable worker in one of the local coal mines. Bob Payne apparently was staying at the house with them while he was on the run. Got into an argument with Tyree's wife at the breakfast table." The newspaper states, "The killing was a cold-blooded murder from all the facts that can be received from the place. The body of the dead woman has been shipped to Georgia for interment." In one of the more famous incidents that happened in Brookside, Alabama, in 1901, to quote the newspaper again, "There was a cold-blooded murder at Brookside, Alabama, last Sunday, in which the Reverend J.W. Bradford was killed in his own home by R.D. Kaufman was actually the justice of the peace for that community. Now, the Reverend J.W. Bradford was the brand new Methodist preacher for Brookside. Apparently, Kaufman had gone to the house or the parsonage of Mr. Bradford, Reverend Bradford, to obtain redress for a slighting remark alleged to have been made by Mr. Bradford concerning the Justice of the Peace Kaufman while he was dressing Sunday school on the morning of the day of the killing. Further research shows that it wasn't at the Sunday school meeting. During his sermon, the Reverend Mr. Bradford expressed the hope that the church would do well during the coming year, and he said it would, provided that such men as Mr. Kaufman were kept out of the church. And it was during this disagreement that the Reverend was shot in the head. Now, our Justice of the Peace immediately after the shooting surrendered himself. After turning himself in, a hearing was held, grand jury was called, and a court date was set. Kaufman ended up taking the stand in his own behalf. His story of the killing never changed during the statements he made earlier and what he made on the stand. He repeated the statement that he was on his way to his office that afternoon when he met a Mr. Hunt, who told him that the Reverend Bradford wanted to see him. The witness said that he went directly to the parsonage in response to this message, and that when he arrived, he was invited in by Reverend Bradford. After he got inside, Mr. Bradford began abusing him, calling him a lying puppy, and at the same time, he grasped him by the collar and shoved him backwards. A struggle followed, and he, Mr. Kaufman, trying to get out the door, and Mr. Bradford holding on to him all the time. During the scuffle, a revolver dropped out of the pocket of the preacher, and the witness said the preacher picked it up. Kaufman stated that he then attempted to and partially got out the door, but Mr. Bradford jammed the door against him, holding him in the door and by the collar and striking him with something that he held in his hand. Apparently, the pistol that had fallen from his pocket and he had picked it up, the preacher was holding the pistol by the barrel and striking Mr. Kaufman in the head with the butt of the handgun. Before Kaufman's testifying, witnesses who had seen the after the shooting immediately and to hearing Kaufman holler out several times, restrained by the Reverend in the doorframe. Several other individuals testified to past acts of the preacher and the fact that the preacher was known to be a regular carrier of a firearm or two, no matter where he went, and had had other altercations with members of his church in other jurisdictions. And this might have possibly been why the Reverend had been moved to Brookside. Well, after deliberating, the jury decided that anything Kaufman had done that would have brought about the death of the preacher was done purely in self-defense. Now, this is the backdrop of this particular town in Alabama, and you would think things would change a little bit over time. Unfortunately, in this year of 2022, because of an investigative report by the Birmingham News, the Huntsville Times, and the Press Register of Mobile, Alabama, they ended up uncovering a surge in the Brookside Police Department's aggressive and what they referred to as arbitrary ticketing of motorists passing through the city. Investigation showed that Brookside, and this is today's Brookside, had an unusually high ratio of police officers to residents. Remember, at this time, we're looking at, according to that particular article, 1,253 individuals living in town, and they had 9 officers, or one officer for every 144 residents. What is significant about this is that in 2018, the town only had one officer, and that officer took care of all the needs and reports working with the local sheriff's department that needed to be done. It was also uncovered that in the year 2020, Brookside officers who were driving unmarked cars, wearing uniforms without patch insignias, made more arrests of misdemeanors than it had residents of the town. And the town also went from towing 50 vehicles in 2018, when they had one officer, to almost 800 vehicles in 2020. These towings from vehicles that were involved in traffic stops that were conducted by the new 9-person police department. The tickets were costing motorists thousands of dollars, and they were based on city ordinances. This ended up being the largest source of revenue for the town, thus allowing them to hire more police officers to make more traffic stops to generate more revenue. In 2021, more than half of Brookside's revenue stemmed from fines and forfeitures of vehicles. Now, the town and the police department are now defending themselves from several lawsuits which accuse Brookside police of fabricating and or creating charges and making up laws in order to produce more ticket revenue. One federal lawsuit alleges malicious prosecution of a pastor, here we bring preachers into the story again, and his sister, who were charged with impersonating police officers in retaliation to them filing a complaint that a Brookside officer allegedly stopped the pastor and used a racist slur against him. The police department has written over 400 tickets in the 2 years for driving in the left lane in a manner that in the state of Alabama was not illegal, but apparently was per the local city ordinance. Now, this sudden attention of the police department and its fundraising, if you want to call it that, brought about the resignation on January 25th of 2022, this year, of Brookside Police Chief Mike Morris. He resigned in the wake of the revelations over the reported policy of methods of policing in Brookside. Now, Brookside Mayor, Mr. Mike Bryan, in a Newsweek magazine article called The Town's Policing, a positive story. When the media interviewed the local sheriff, Sheriff Petaway, his comment was that, "I really wouldn't be surprised if the FBI don't open up an investigation. You can't do what they're doing and what's going on over there." Now, the report of these alleged abuses by the Brookside Police Department caught the attention of the Alabama Senate, and they unanimously, both Republicans and Democrats, passed a bill limiting the amount of money cities can keep from their fines. They cannot use criminal activity as a money, or alleged criminal activity as a moneymaker. Chief of Police Jones was working in Brookside. The oversized department had 10 or more full and part-time officers. They had 10 individual dark vehicles that patrolled the interstate in that area. 10 vehicles for a population not even 1,500. The town has no traffic lights and only one retail store, and you can guess what that is, the Dollar General. 50% of the town's $1.2 million budget was coming from these fines. Now, former Brookside Chief of Police Michael Ryan Jones just recently, in the last week or so, again made the media headlines with an incident where he was arrested in Covington County, according to a different sheriff, Sheriff Blake Truman. In an announcement posted on the sheriff department's social media website, the sheriff said that Jones had been charged with impersonating a police officer and turned himself into their jail later that day. Jones was accused of using his former police badge to identify himself as a Brookside police chief in an attempt to avoid getting a traffic ticket on April 12th. And of course, this rolled downhill again back to the mayor of Brookside, who responded immediately with a statement saying, "We had no knowledge of Mike Jones' whereabouts after his resignation." Basically, apparently, they're saying he just disappeared. "I and the town council have been focused on restoring relationships with the community." And The mayor also confirmed that the Chevy Tahoe that the former chief was operating was in fact not registered or the property of the town and belonged to former Chief Jones, who had apparently tried to convince the stopping officer that he was on the job, so to speak. I hope you enjoyed listening to these quick bonus stories. Join us next Saturday when we start back with the first episode of Season 8 of Felon File. And I hope I have some good Shade of Blue stories researched for you guys that you will enjoy and find interesting. So until then, again, next Saturday at 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time here in the United States and at other times in other parts of the world, be that as it may, come on back and check us out. We'd be happy to hear from you as well. Drop us a line at felonfile@gmail.com, or you can go to the links at scottlunsfordauthor.com or felonfile.com, where you can also check out some of my books and hopefully my new nonfiction book on court and crime in the Western North Carolina mountains. You can also pick up a Felon File t-shirt or a coffee mug, if you so desire, from those websites. So check them out, and we'll talk to you guys later. Remember, if you have the opportunity, do something nice for somebody this week. It really makes a difference in the world. And we'll talk to you guys later. Victoria, back to you. Close us out. Bye, y'all.
This has been a bonus edition of the Felon File podcast. Listen next week for more stories from Scott and his research on topics and issues of crimes, punishment, and incidents. This is your producer, Victoria. Thank you for listening. For more information on this podcast, or Scott's books and writings, go to scottlunsfordauthor.com and felonfile.com. Scott can also be contacted at these websites. Be sure to check out the stuff page on the website. Pick up a Felon File t-shirt, or coffee mug. You can also support the Felon File podcast by buying us a coffee from the link on the website. Thank you for listening. 2. 1. End.